And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strawn. And now, here's David.
Hello! Charlottesville!
Record.
It is Sunday! It is 10 o'clock. I thought it was going to be warmer. I broke out the jorts just for today because it was so hot yesterday. And I've been in my lawn mowing phase, so I've just been, like, jorting it out.
The jorts. Is that really a thing?
Is that really a thing? Oh, so a thing. That's like, black hippiness all the way. So... Holla if you hear me. So yeah, but it's a little chilly. It's a little cloudy. A little more humid than I wanted it to be this Sunday. But whatever. If you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown, your show about local art here in the new and reinvigorated. It's getting better. Charlottesville, y'all are getting better.
Almost half a year Nazi free.
Yeah, almost half a year. We're like one of those old factories, like this many days without an accident / Nazi invasion.
I was walking past Tom Tom last and with like one of the Tom
speaking
Tom concerts Nazi, last.
Speaking of Nazis. Of rapists and racists. Sorry.
But I was walking past the Tom Tom Festival last night and the band was just like they were like, hey, this is a really great place here. It's really so beautiful. It's just like we really enjoy it here. We were walking around yesterday thinking, wow, you know, should we move to Charlottesville? It's like, do you guys get that? And people like move and I'm like walking on the street and I yell, yeah, but then we have Nazis. Just to balance it out.
But I could totally see like the Charlottesville like public relations campaign like actually like planning actors to be like, wow, Charlottesville is just such an amazing place despite all of that past, you know, news coverage. We should move down here, these rolling foothills. We should give it a shot. Where is my co-host? They're lovely, the lascivious. You look loquacious, Leslie M. Scott Jones. She's usually here. She ain't saying nothing, so I'm a little worried about Queen B, wondering what she's doing. But, yeah, we're going to get her on the messenger right now. But, hey, the show must go on. She would have wanted it that way, so I'm going to keep it going. Y'all keep it going. Y'all keep it going, y'all. And without further ado, let's get to the art of the show, because I know y'all are tired of hearing me talk. Just shut up, David. Shut up. Just shut up and get to our guests.
Time to start with the art.
Time to start with the art. That's probably her right now. Okay, that's you actually texting her. I'm looking at my phone. On we go. All right. We have with us, I call them the Sarahs, affectionately. Sarah Russell, Sarah Van Landingham. They are both student interns. They are putting on the Art of Protest Tour at the UVA Fralin Art Museum. It is going down April 21st. Sarah and Sarah, say hello. Thank you for coming to Homegrown.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
First time here, right?
Yes.
All right. Hopefully it will not be the last. Because, well, Sarah, you just said you wanted to be a curator for the rest of your life, so I know you're going to be down here at least a couple more times. What's this?
See if we can stream that second.
Look, you're the producer. Can you work? It's technology. Yeah. Like, do your thing. Go to Facebook, then Hunter. We're going to figure it out. All right. Art of Protest Tour. So without further ado, like we were just talking before in the studio, we were talking about how also the Whitney is doing their incomplete history of protest throughout the United States. They're putting on a show. It started August 18th of 2017 and is going through August 27th of 2018. Now, I talked to y'all and y'all said no relation. This is kind of something that, you know, you brought up on your own. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask that the events of A11 and A12 here in Charlottesville weren't kind of at least a catalyst for the conversation of having an event like this at the Fralin Art Museum.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a really unique opportunity that the interns get to curate their own show at the museum. And when we first started thinking about the theme, I think we all agreed pretty early on that we needed to do something to address the events in August.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you go into the Miller Gallery, which is our biggest gallery, there's currently a giant exhibition kind of lauding Thomas Jefferson and his architecture and design, and it does a really inadequate job of addressing him as a slave owner. And that's just a fact of the exhibition. So when we're thinking about the current political events and what the museum landscape looks like right now, we really wanted to kind of bring attention to those straight up like ignored voices almost. So that's like two of the things that we were thinking about. Like, how can we offer that really important alternative perspective in the museum at a time when it's really important that it gets heard?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And while there were so many protests going down, there's you actually see like current protesting going down for the TomTom's Founder Festival that I, you know, definitely agree with. Talk about that. Talk about how protests from then up until now is.
Why do you have them on the Blues Brothers filter?
I don't know. That's amazing. Get out of that. Why is this? Why is this?
It's fine with us.
So, this is the craziest show ever. Just do it. Go with it. Oh, we had it. And then, all right, whatever. one of you needs a harmonica. That's all I got to say. So talk about how that kind of started up. A12 goes down. You figure that you need to do something, that you need to say something. You were both like intern curators by heart and by imagination. You guys, I keep saying guys, I mean in a non-binary context. So I just want to just put that out there. You've done exhibitions before at Fralin?
We haven't.
No.
This is your first one ever.
Yes.
Yeah, and usually undergraduates don't get
they don't get the
thing.
Yeah.
Right on. So that's even more interesting. So talk about that. Because, you know, you say you're interning under Fralin. So mm-hmm. you're interning to become curators and to, you know, not only like know about museums, but create exhibitions like this. So talk about that. Like, this is your first one ever. Mm-hmm. So, like, talk about why you felt that. Of your first one ever, that this had to be the first one ever.
Yeah, I think our answer would connect to your first question about sort of the narrative and like what's going on now. And we didn't want to just tell a story about and only use civil rights photography mm-hmm. and kind of present this image of like an isolated event of things that happened. We wanted to emphasize that this is an ongoing narrative. And so we have we're really lucky to have a little pop-up book by Kara Walker, who is a contemporary artist. So that's just one way, but we wanted to make it really clear that this is an ongoing narrative and not just a distant history sort mm-hmm. of exhibition.
And we were kind of limited by what we have in the collection at the Fralin, so we couldn't loan out anything from other museums. So we had to draw from the Danny Lyon photography we have from the civil rights movement and other sorts of protest-esque photography. And our show is mostly photography, but we have some other, like, Melvin Edwards Lynch fragment that's like a sculptural piece, and we have the pop-up book by Kara Walker. So there's a little bit of variety. And we want to show that protest isn't just an American thing. We have an image that was taken in Japan by Eugene Smith, who's an American photographer, but it details protests in Japan. So mm-hmm. that's like one really important work that shows like the multicultural aspect of protest.
Right on.
Yeah.
Speaking of multiculturalism, let's, you know, get rid of the elephant in the room. You two are, you know, bright, white presenting women. Presenting an exhibition about, you know, protest. Explain the push in the narrative mm-hmm. for multiculturalism and how you approach that. What other multicultural people of color did you approach for this exhibit? Was there a direct like focus on? I hate the word diversity now because it's such like a, you know, a empty, you know, frame piece for you know, a perception of equity mm-hmm. but there has to be like some effort for inclusion in an exhibition about art of protest, being that protest has been mostly led by people of color, whereas protest songs of rebellion, of, you know, of inadequacy, stuff like Fight for Your Right, have all been like, I'm going to ask a question. Yeah, talk about inclusion. Like what? Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great question because this was definitely something that we met resistance with in the beginning because all of the interns are white.
Yeah,
I'm
there's
sure.
only one of us is a guy. It's
like a bunch
ten,
of white
ten
women.
White women.
Yeah,
and so we several of the interns were, and I think rightly wary in the beginning mm-hmm. of taking this story and telling it. Because it sort of felt weird to be like appropriating this story that's totally not ours.
Yeah.
But the point that we came to is that it was still really important that we make this story heard through art. Like, and I think that art is a really great medium where we can like show this art without taking over the story. Like we can kind of give a voice without taking over that voice.
Yeah. And we've been pretty careful. Like we had our exhibition opening like 2 weeks ago. And when we presented, we were very clear with, this is not our narrative, this is not our experience, but it's an experience that's worth telling and something that people need to see in the museum. They need to understand that this happened, is happening, will continue happening, and is really worthwhile. And we're very wary that it doesn't belong to us. This isn't our experience. We're not appropriating the story. And we're, I think, just being really just wary of that.
And I think that's just important. I think the very first step is acknowledgement yeah. of privilege and acknowledgement of like this isn't mine
mm-hmm.
so I'm not going to co-opt it or I'm not trying to, and even if there is like that accidental like appropriation, I think it can be looked upon. People make mistakes mm-hmm. so that's actually as a person of color where I try to come from in any way. But you said that the entire board is all white. Why do you think that is?
I think this is a huge problem in museums.
Definitely.
Any populations of color are totally underrepresented, and it's there are programs to address it, but it's just at this point, like you see in a lot of major museums, all of the curators are white, and we're working against that, but at this point the museum is a pretty antiquated institution and we do have to work against
it. But why do you think that is? Why do you think that white people feel the need to tell the story of history?
So it's a white person's space. It's an institution of the rich is what the museums are. It dates back to Europe, like
imperialism.
It's a rich person's space. And so they historically it's just shown works and objects that are theirs that show their story. So it's just been historically white and rich. And so now we're being more progressive, we're trying to be more progressive, we're trying to include those minority voices, it's still hard because it's still a white space and it's still like an institution of the rich. No matter how hard people are trying to push against that, that's still what it is today.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about this confluence of the economic issue and the racial issue. I put it out there, don't you? Do you think that this is something that can be said for art in general? Because I know that in terms of David and I are both primarily theater artists. And in the theater world, we run into a similar thing where it's like, well, let's get more people's stories out there. Let's get different stories out there. But then you step back and say, okay, well, who is it who's paying for this art? Who is it who is supporting theaters? Well, mm-hmm. it's it's certainly not the government. You know, theaters can't survive based on their tickets, on their ticket sales. They survive mostly through donations. And who's making those donations? Rich white people.
Yeah.
And do rich white people want to see, a bunch of plays talking about how rich white people are bad? No, they don't.
Yeah. Museums are exactly the same.
Yeah.
We were just talking about this in class the other day. It's really hard to affect change in museums because it's this really old institution. And like you said, almost completely supported by private donations from wealthy white people.
Cool. So I want to ask both of y'all how y'all plan on changing that, being kind of the future of curation. But we got to take a drop. We got to pay some bills. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop! 16 minutes past the hour if you're just tuning in. You're listening to Homegrown. 94.7 WPVC.
And if you're just tuning in, feel grateful that you've missed all the little mistakes that we've made so far.
We're doing okay. We're doing okay. The progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Black Frodo. See, I totally forgot my introduction, too. Like, we're just screwing up. We're usually better than this. We apologize. Leslie's not here. That's the thing. We're missing that Leslie juice. But we are with Sarah Russell and Sarah Van Landingham. They're talking about the Art of Protest tour at the UVA Fralin Art Museum. Their very, very first tour. It's going to be bonkers. It's going to be crazy. April 21st. So we were just talking before the commercial break of all of our, you know, constant sponsors about how museums are just basically actualized imperialism, and how, you know, they're basically made for rich white folks to basically, you know, sneer and, you know, laud themselves for the accomplishments they've made in history and moving forward. So
they're not totally that. Certainly there is a reflection of a deep history of deeply ingrained political disenfranchisement and racism involved in it, but, you know, there's the occasional nice artwork that you get to see.
If I have to go through another museum seeing another mask, spear, or shield of an African warrior, I'm going to scream out loud. You see, they're all savages. You don't understand.
That's what Black Panther on Blu-ray is for.
But that was beautiful, though. That's different. What do y'all plan on doing? Because y'all said that y'all want to be curators. What do y'all plan on doing to change that sense of imperialism and really make museums an all-inclusive place that celebrates all cultures and invites all cultures to enjoy in that, you know, revelry?
So, first of all, I want to say that while the museum is a deeply troubled institution, there's a lot going on right now, and there's a lot of great museums doing great stuff, especially in our country. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say more so than in Europe, in my experience. I worked at the High Museum in Atlanta this summer, and they make a huge effort of putting on shows. They have a show called Making Africa right now, and I think they do an amazing job of having exhibitions that don't just draw white audiences, but that tell important stories, and just shifting the priority to telling stories instead of drawing audiences. And so I think I would just want to continue in that mission as a curator myself.
I think that the first thing that I think of is, like, we need to stop thinking of art by African-American artists as art by African-American artists and just think of it as art and kind of respect it as the same standard as, like, contemporary art is contemporary art. And until we can this is idealistic, but until we can look past the color of the artist and just look at art for art and for what it is and for its stylistic qualities and its subject matter, which will always be fraught, but until we can stop focusing on, I mean, obviously, this is idealistic, but I think just making sure that, like, typically it's been all white artists shown, and until we can stop having just, like, the token black artist show, and until we can just, like, have it as part of the museum, as part of the collection to have on view all the time, is when I think that those barriers will start to really be toppled.
So this is really exciting talking to you guys, because you guys are we hope curators of the future, and thus necessarily the curators of our past. Let me ask you, let's take a step back and be a little bit more general. What do you think the museum should be?
That's a big question.
Yeah, but that's it, right? What's sure. what should the role of the museum be?
And I think whatever I say, I would be an idealistic answer, mm-hmm. because we're always gonna have to.
museum. But you are so young and bubbling and full of life. You're creating things.
That's the point of your youth. Don't waste it.
You're gonna change the
Jump
world.
In that ideal pool.
You're gonna change it. You're doing it right now.
But we will always have to take into consideration what the museum has been. Like, we're not gonna just be able to start over new. So I think, like, with consideration to what has already been. The museum is supposed to hold and take care of and curate and present the objects of our culture, the most important objects. And I think the museum's most important role is as the interpreter of that stuff, of these physical material objects. And so So the most important thing the museum can do for society is to protect those objects and to tell their story with a multi-perspectival view that takes into account not only the dominant narratives, but everything else that's going on, doing a lot of hard work to research that and to tell that story in a way that's engaging. I don't know, Sarah, what would you add?
Yeah, extending on that, like, I think that it's a really valuable tool for education. I mean, you learn about, I mean, this is redundant. We've been talking about this the whole show, but you learn about the civil rights movement in school, but you don't really, I mean, you're reading it in a textbook, your teacher talks about it, but I think when you go to the museum, you can see different events, you can see all different sorts of happenings, what's going on. Like, sometimes you see images that aren't seen in the textbooks that you wouldn't get just in the classroom. So I think that's really important. And at the same time, one thing that I've noticed is, like, the Trail of Tears is being reframed in current textbooks as, like, the American Indians just left so the white people could take over, like, their land. And so, like, I think it's...
Excuse me!
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's important, like, the museum can say, look, this was a... We have a lot of American Indian objects in our object study gallery, and to say this was made by, we have some Cherokee items, so it's made by Cherokee tribes, like, part of their history is the Trail of Tears, or I'm not actually sure about that, but for some of those people that underwent that, this is their history, and this is what really happened, and so don't listen to your textbook, because sometimes that can be wrong.
And we have actual objects with which we can teach about these things, which I think is incredible for, not only for students, for young students, but for adults.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Continue.
Okay.
So, that was it?
I mean, I could keep going. And so, like, that's the museum's role, is to take the objects, to use the opportunity that we have with these tangible talking points, and to make them even more, like, helpful for this conversation through our educational material, through what we write on labels, through what we put on the gallery walls.
Yeah. I want to make a statement, and then I want to ask a question to Sarah V's comment about... for lack of better words, I'm paraphrasing, forgetting about, like, racial inequality and, you know, just focusing on the art. God bless Angela Davis for infusing the thought of feminist thinking into my world. And allowing two topics to not be mutually exclusive. I think that's what makes art beautiful, and not only to notice the technical, the brush strokes and the medium and what they use and the type of paint and acrylic or oil or whatever, but also the pain and the suffering and the trauma that brought that work to life. And I think that both of those aspects create art for me to be so moving and so important for me to express it on a show like this to people like y'all. So not to say I would challenge that, but I think that both can be allowed, that we can focus on racial trauma and past aggressions of cultures, and also that type of, you know, that intricate stuff. That technical stuff, you know what I'm saying? But the question I want to ask, and this is short, do you think there's a misconception of museums? Because when I first think of museums, I think of a guy in I think of an old bearded guy in a stuffy beard, and he's like, and over here was the Jurassic period of 19. Do you think that there needs to be kind of like this PR campaign to, like, revive, like, extreme museums, or, like, you know, I don't know, like,
do you think there's a misconception?
I think of my feet hurting. Very first thought of museums.
A lot of wood. So I'm just asking, like, do you think there's a misconception about museums and curators, and if there's anything that y'all feel that y'all need to do to, like, revamp that and revitalize that importance of museums and that energy that museums can provide for people?
Yes, there's definitely a huge misconception about museums, and then that in turn creates these barriers, and people don't want to go into museums.
Right.
And then for that reason, we don't have the people that would want to make change. They aren't getting involved in museums because they don't feel welcome in the museum, and the museum stays the same. So that's definitely something we want to change as docents, as curators, just as students at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I think the term museum is kind of evolving into like a blanket term, which is a good thing. Like, for example, the National Building Museum in D.C. did an exhibition 2 summers ago called The Beach. And they had this like a giant ball pit for adults, but all the balls were made out of recycled material. And like you could go like swim in this giant pool of ball pits and like in the National Building Museum, and you learn about like biodegradable things. And it was just really cool. And it's like, that was one of their like most attended exhibitions ever. It was like temporary during the summer called The Beach. And I think that those sorts of like kind of unique museums taking steps to like make it really welcoming to children and families especially is like a step in the right direction.
You can't resist a ball pit.
Yeah.
You really can't.
Try walking past
a ball pit.
You really shouldn't resist a ball pit.
and be like, nah, I don't want to do that.
It's interesting that you talk about barriers, because even something as simple as the Fralin here, when we first started doing the show, I turned and looked at the Fralin and said, well, let's see what's going on with the Fralin. And when I first went there, I was like, am I allowed to come in here? Because I'm not affiliated with the university. I don't know. Is this just like a little private university thing? And they're just like, no, like people from the community are allowed to be in here. I'm like, really? Because how come nobody knows you guys exist?
And it's so sad because we work in the education department. We work in the trailer with all the offices of the whole museum, and they're trying so hard to tell the community, like, you can come in.
Yeah, please come.
But it's just not like it's not efficient yet, and so there is still this sort of stigma.
Mm. Part of that is like the location too. There's no parking, and it's just really difficult to get to. How do people get there if there's no parking? Right. You know.
Yeah. And honestly, museum architecture even is kind of just like imposing and this big, like scary building that no one wants to just like wander into.
Yeah.
What you need is like one of those like chicken costume guys that stand outside and they're like parking this way and like culture driven museum, cultural amazement. We got to wrap it up, but we wish you well. I plan on checking it out. Come on back and tell us how it went.
Okay.
And
about
your next exhibit when you bring it on. Wink, wink. Sarah Russell, Sarah Van Landingham, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Haz, so much.
No problem. All right. And here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Currently running now through June 10th, the American Shakespeare Center. Spring season sees their Wicked Folly Tour return to the Blackfriar Playhouse in Stanton. They're performing an adaptation of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, Bill Kane's Equivocation, and Macbeth, and Taming of the Shrew by Shakespeare. Now through May 14th, Albemarle Parks and Recreation offers a tango workshop at Murray High School. And now through May the 5th, Hand to God at Live Arts. We had him in the studio last week. It was amazing. You should check him out. Last day for the Towntown's Founder Festival blog party features concerts by local bands in Emancipation Park. Today is April. Today is April, of course, but April is National Poetry Month. Here in Afternoon of Poetry, your poets Carolyn Bray and Patsy Asuncion read their work at New Dominion Bookshop at 2 p.m. April 21st, Charlottesville Ballet's Spring Fling features dance, wine, hors d'oeuvres, and in-studio shopping from local boutiques. I should have kept up the French accent during boutiques. And artists at the Charlottesville Ballet Studio Theater. Actually, my French accent is horrible, so I'll stop. April 18th, the winner of this year's Challenge Into Change writing contest by the Women's Initiative read from their work at the Carver Recreation Center. April 18th, the UVA Food Collaborative, UVA Sustainable Food Strategy Task Force, UVA Sustainability, and Sierra Club. That's a lot of sustainable people. Sponsor a screening of the documentary What Lies Upstream at the Central Branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. April 19th, at the Kluge Rue Art Museum, Lexington poet Jess Brophy leads a 90-minute exercise in which writers can be inspired by the museum's art. Is that forced inspiration? Like, if I'm inspired, I'm just going to go home and write about it. You can't make me write.
It's an actual museum.
I'm offended.
It's an actual museum.
Just don't tell me what to do. April 19th, the UVA MFA Reading Series continues at New Dominion Bookshop on the Downtown Mall with Helen Chung and Adam Rohr reading from their works. April 19th, UVA artist in residence, composer, and trumpeter Paul Brody joins the UVA Klezmer Ensemble at Old Cabell Hall. April 20th, 420, New Dominion Bookshop hosts the Charlottesville Reading Series with poet Angie Hogan and essayist writer Jeffrey Renard Allen. That is going to be some slow reading that day. April 20th, UVA African Music Dance Ensemble performs at Old Cabell Hall. And also April 20th, a student art exhibition and chocolate chowdown. Too funny. Combines a showing of the works of PVC student, artist, and chocolate. Hey, you've got your chocolate in my art.
Well, you've got your art in my chocolate.
Oh, April 21st. Kirsten Page Madonia leads you through turning a vague concept and or character sketch into a novel at the Charlottesville Writer House. That sounds fun. April 21st, Charlottesville's Ballet's Spring Fling, featuring dance, wine, hors d'oeuvres, all that stuff, at the Ballet Studio Theater this time. Yo, actually, I need to write a novel. I just need to, like, grow a pitch,
you
write
still
a novel.
Need to.
Yeah. Money in the bank, baby.
I want to read the David novel.
And for your music options this week.
Today, Jazz for Justice. The UVA Jazz Ensemble performs in support of the Legal Aid Justice Center. And music scholarships at Old Cabell Hall at 3:30. Today, Peter Sykes returns as the Westminster Organ Concert Series continues with selections from Johann Sebastian Bach at Westminster Presbyterian Church at 4 p.m. Also today, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. April 17th, a night of percussion as the UVA Percussion Ensemble performs at Old Cabell Hall. Also on the 17th, Travis Elliott and Fellini's and the Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. On the 18th, LG and Friends are at the Whiskey Jar.
I prefer Samsung and Friends more.
Do you like Samsung and Friends more? Okay. Really, I prefer Captain Planet and Friends. But LG is the man, and his friends can jam, and they're both at the Whiskey Jar on the 18th. And you can get your country punk on with Studebaker Huck at Rapture on the 18th, too. On the 19th, the Currys at the Whiskey Jar, the Michael Ellswood Gathering, and then Tyler Dickett Band at Fellini's, Skip Haga and Company at Dirty Nelly's. On the 20th, Charlottesville's most unique performance space, The Garage, is up and running for another spring-summer season right across from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Wes Swing and Juliana Doherty, they're going to be performing there.
Is that what that place is?
That is exactly what that place is.
I didn't even know they did shows in that place.
All
I just saw was a garage.
No, they do shows. It's cool because it's they open up the garage, the performers will perform in the garage.
Have y'all seen this?
No.
And people sit on the edge of Emancipation Park and listen to and watch the shows.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that part.
You've seen that. There you go. It's a fun place.
I didn't know that was the
same. That's exactly what that is. April 20th, Danny Schmidt and Devin Sproul at Fry Spring Beach Club. Chamomile and Whiskey play Fridays after 5. Mojo Pie at Dirty Nelly's. Susie and the Pistols at Glasshouse Winery.
Glasshouse.
April 21st, Willie D at Albemarle Cider Wilkes. Floral Tone to the Max at James River Brewery. The Gladstones at the Batesville Market. The Eli Cook Band at Dirty Nelly's. And DJ Tova at Rapture every Monday, of course, at the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School.
Uh-oh.
Also, Seafoot, Charlottesville. Friends of Old Time Music giving you your weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? Also on Monday, singer-songwriter night of the local. Tuesdays is the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. The Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero on Wednesday. This is your Wednesday. Open mic night at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery.
Bam!
Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub hosted by Josh Mayo.
Bam!
Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9.
Bam!
Bachata Fusion at the Anteroom presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club.
Bam!
DJ and Friends at the Bebedero.
Bam!
And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Ooh, yeah! Every Thursday it's Lua at the Bebedero, and every Thursday,
John Dearth!
With the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just gots to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of our artistic events in our wonderful artistic town.
This is Homegrown.
Drop!
Hi, this is Corey Bix from Victory Hall Opera. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local arts on 94.7 WPVC.
Oh, 36 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. His guests are local students talking about recent anti-gun violence rallies here and abroad. Amazing show. I did the March for Our Lives rally about a couple of weeks ago with these amazing kids that spoke at the rally. So I just want to give them a shout out. They're amazing. All these kids, Parkland, everybody else is amazing. That all-black school in New Jersey that walked out didn't get any media coverage, though. I just want to say that. But without further ado, we have two wonderful guests whose name I forgot, but they are not forgettable. I just want to make that known. I should have turned the camera before I did that. But that's okay. Lessons learned. It is Tim Carrier and Brittany Eversberg. They are co-chairs for the event of National Poem in Your Pocket Day, which is every day for me, actually. I just popped out Desiderata the other day just because I'm slowly losing faith in humanity, and I just needed a checkup, like you do, for Max Ehrman, because that's probably one, if not my favorite, one of my favorite poems. So I always got my poem in my pocket. But the Jefferson Madison Regional Library is heading this thing up April 27th. Also, I want to remind you that April is National Poetry Month, so if you got a poem, write it, read it, tell somebody you need it. Got that poem in my pocket. Poem in my pocket. Sorry. So, what is National Poem Poetry Month, and what is National Poem in Your Pocket Day, Tim and Brittany?
Well, first of all, I gotta say it's April 26th.
Oops,
my bad.
But you can have.
We're gonna get on our intern about that.
But you can have
this correction right here.
A poem in your pocket any day of the week.
Any day of the week. Poems in Pocket 365. It's called your phone, ladies and gentlemen. It's a beautiful thing.
I knew we messed up. As soon as it said 27th, Tim had this look go across his face. Like, oops. Like, uh-oh. No.
We screwed up. So it's April 26th. Mm-hmm. Get it right.
And what is National Poem in Your Pocket Day?
National Poem in Your Pocket Day has been going on for maybe about 15, 16 years. It was actually started in New York as a way to celebrate the city's National Poetry Month events. And probably about 10 years ago, one of our colleagues, Wendy Saz at the library, proposed the idea of observing National Poem in Your Pocket Day in Charlottesville through the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, we have participated in a number of activities, a number of events, which include handing out poems to people in the Charlottesville area and the surrounding area to celebrate the joy of poetry and the pleasure of reading and sharing poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Now, in doing this, are you just hoping to get people to write more poetry, or are you just getting people to enjoy more poetry? Like, you know, what I hate to say what's the goal behind this, because there really shouldn't be a goal behind what you're doing. I mean, It's just a celebration of art and hoping that other people do the same. But I guess that is my question. What's your goal in National Poem in Your Pocket Day?
It's actually a little bit of both. Certainly on Poem in Your Pocket Day, we hand out poems that we've received permissions to reproduce and distribute. And so we want people to enjoy the pleasure of reading poetry, of enjoying how it can be used. But in addition to Poem in Your Pocket Day, we do have a couple of other events going on during National Poetry Month. One of those is Poetry on the Steps, which is the same day, that evening at the Central Library downtown, where people are invited to come in and read poetry to the audience. And they can read their own work, or they can read the work of a favorite poet.
Mm-hmm.
It is to inspire and bring the community together in a lot of ways and share
art that speaks to you, you know, especially mm-hmm. when we have troubling times, poetry can really help, and this year is going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So talk, can you talk more about that, about the idea of using this event, using art to or specifically poetry to bring people together? And
mm-hmm. well, like any form of art, it can be healing. And I know we had a pop-up Poem in Your Pocket Day after the events in August that my wonderful coworker Sarah and the whole reference team put together. And a lot of people really thought that that was... very helpful to them afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people look forward to Poem in Your Pocket Day every year. You know, you could be having a really bad day, then you see these awesome t-shirts, mm-hmm. and you know that folks are coming with with the poems. And, you know, they may not know exactly what day Poem in Your Pocket Day is, but when they see us coming with the baskets, and people come right up to us, mm-hmm. because they remember it every year, mm-hmm. and they keep poems from past years. I mean, mm-hmm. I know I've had that case where mm-hmm. people break out their poems that they've had mm-hmm. and show them to me. So yeah. That's really special.
That's right. Mm. So as Brittany was saying, we have the poems available in all of our branch libraries in the mm-hmm. main library, but staff and volunteers also hand out poems during a period during that day on the downtown mall. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people will recognize us from that. We'll talk to them about the poems and what we're doing, and their response has been overwhelmingly mm-hmm. positive. And a lot of times they'll say, oh, I remember you from last mm-hmm. year.
We also go to UVA and UVA Hospital as well?
Right. Several organizations and businesses also mm-hmm. help us by handing out the poems at their locations as well. Some of the businesses on the mall and a number of other places.
Now, talk about the artists that you feature in these poems that you pass out. Is this like a contest where people like can submit poetry and that you guys choose like a certain few that you pass out? Are they local artists like in that particular region? Is it Charlottesville based? Is it Virginia based? Like what is like, yeah, exactly. So like what's the expansivity of, Is that a word?
It started out as a word, and then you added a little bit on extra onto it, I think.
Expansivity, 2018. David Von Strahn, patent pending. How expansive is that, Serge?
How expansive? Well, actually, I guess you could say we go pretty far and wide. We have a committee of staff members who plan the event every year, and who plan the library's observation of the event every year. And there are several of us who will locate poems that maybe we like or poems that that we have heard about, and we will then contact either publishers or agents or sometimes the poets themselves, depending on where it is, and we will ask for permission to make copies of the poets mm-hmm. so we can hand them out during that day. And so that may be classic poets from years past. It may be, you know, current modern contemporary poets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how that works. And this year we'll have probably somewhere between 60 and 70 different poems that we'll be handing out mm-hmm. Copies of.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask, are those discussions ever contentious? Because I can imagine you get to the places where like people like they get their favorite poems, like, oh, this poem has to be in here. No, this poem has to be. No, we can't do a poem about this. I mean, is there ever anything?
Rudyard Kipling.
Is there any?
I don't think I've ever seen it be contentious.
Oh, no. We haven't had any issues there. Most of the people who are working on that, they've got really good ideas mm-hmm. for the poems that they're choosing.
We do try to be conscious of diversity, though.
Exactly.
We try to get a wide array of different types
right.
of backgrounds
Absolutely.
And different types.
Exactly.
We don't just want all, you know, happy poems. We want poems that are thought-provoking mm-hmm. as well mm-hmm. and different types of things.
So, like, talk about that. You said you had a pop-up event during A12, which had to probably stir up a lot of, like, heavy emotional poetry. Are those experiences like navigated through differently than just like, you know, a quote unquote happy event, the National Poem in Your Pocket Day? Like how are those?
How does the selection process differ?
Yeah, mm-hmm. in a way, like or not even the election process, like just or it's not even the selection process, just the process in general, because you know that time is going to be a lot more heavy you deal with poetry, which deals with emotions, which deals with sensitivity. People are hypersensitive, hypervigilant, especially during those past 2 months afterwards. Yeah. So what does that look like for you in, or what did that look like for you in relation to now?
At that time, obviously, our time period was a little more limited because the library was trying to present a number of events during the immediate aftermath of that, and things that would help to provide some healing, to help to bring people together. So normally, we spend pretty much the entire year working and preparing for this. So obviously, we had a much more limited time frame. Mm-hmm. There were one or two publishers or agents that we were able to contact and get a very quick response from that, and we used a few public domain poems as well. So so we were a little more limited in the amount of time we could work with, and that also involved the I guess the types of poems that we were able to get to hand out at that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was a patron's suggestion that we have that pop-up after August 12th, and we were like, heck yeah, let's do it.
Right.
And you know, it was great to do.
Right on. So it sounds like it means a lot to you. So I'm probably going to dig deeper in the next segment and do my Dr. Phil thing. I don't know. It means a lot to me. I like poetry a lot. But we got to do a drop. This is Homegrown. Drop! 48 minutes past the hour if you're just tuning in. You missed a great Homegrown. But we're going to make up for it in the... Why are you laughing? 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after this show for the Sunday morning wake-up call. Rick Moore is your host. He's talking to kids about the stuff that's happening now. Anti-gun violence rallies.
So need to work on your script. You so need to work on your script manipulation.
No, I got it.
There it is.
Recent anti-gun violence rallies here and abroad. That's what I said. 94.7. But now we're talking to Tim Carrier and Brittany Eversberg. I'm gonna get this right at some point. National Poem in Your Pocket Day is going down April 26th. They are the co-chairs of this event, Jefferson Madison Regional Library, a 14 to 16 year long event that they have headed up for quite some time. Now I gotta ask, when y'all came in, I just sense like excitement. You know, you say that people remember you after years, so there's a charisma. There is a genuine enjoyment for what you guys are doing and what you're providing for the community. So I just want to ask, what does poetry personally mean to you as people, as Tim and Brittany? I'm guessing Tim and Brittany. what does it mean to you personally, like deep down inside? Make me cry.
That's a loaded question. It can change your mood. For me, you know, if I'm having a rough day, go find a happy poem, and it helps change my outlook. Or find something thought-provoking. Or, you know, something that touches you. And I think poetry has the potential to do that, which is why I really enjoy it.
Mm. And in many cases, it's a compact way to enjoy literature, enjoy what the poet might be trying to say in the work. So it's interesting to kind of contemplate and mull over. In fact, a lot of times when we're handing out the poems, people will open them up and read them right at that moment, or sometimes they'll just tuck it away in their pocket and leave it to read a little bit later and kind of think a little bit more about it or share it with somebody else. And so in addition to what it means to me, I also like the fact that it will give people, you know, that opportunity to do that.
Mm. Do you, Brittany's, you said you catch a happy poem if you're not feeling. Do you have a go-to? Like I said, Desiderata. I also like Still I Rise because Maya's the queen. Do you don't have a go-to? You just have like a group and you just
kind of. I just kind of pop through things. I love Shel Silverstein. I know this juvenile, but it's awesome. Love it.
Yeah,
you know. I kind of consider Dr. Seuss a form of poetry, too.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Heck,
I'm
yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, just silly things like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you want something a little bit peppy, happy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You, Tim?
I also like Shel Silverstein quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I have read some work by poets who focus on young adults, on teens. People like Nikki Grimes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Jason Reynolds, the novelist.
Mm.
has also written poetry and is also really really good in that field. So quite a few, and like Brittany, a lot of times it kind of depends on the mood, and so I'll check with poets, different poets, and see what I can find.
Mm-hmm. So I know that New Dominion Bookshop will have poets doing readings. In fact, we just announced a reading with poets. I don't run across the library sponsoring readings. Am I just missing them?
We've had author readings and some poet readings in the past. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, in fact, one of our colleagues was able to arrange a very successful program with Nikki Giovanni. Yeah. And she came and spoke, and the audience, I mean, we had a packed house.
The room was packed.
The room was packed. This was
it
a couple
should
of years
be.
Ago. Exactly. Right. Right.
The Wembley should be packed when Nikki Giovanni speaks. It should
right.
be.
But we've also had had author visits as well, not mm-hmm. just for poetry, but for novels as well. So so we do periodically have.
This is so great because it's just so our previous guests they were just talking about how to open up museums and how to make them more accessible and how to break down some of the barriers, cultural in terms of actual cultural barriers, but also barriers in terms of appreciation and perception to make them more accessible. And it seems like this program is the same type of thing, both for poetry as an art form, but also for the library as a place where you can access these artistic works.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely is. And since it does involve other groups and other organizations in the community, it's a good way to provide outreach to the community. Mm-hmm. We may be out in the community sharing the poems, and if people have not been into the library, hopefully it'll give them the encouragement to visit the library or take a look at the services that we do offer.
It really does make it accessible, and mm-hmm. you know, half the battle sometimes is getting people to come in, and then they realize we have more than just mm-hmm. books there. We have programs, we have things that they might be able to do, like our job exactly. center that they needed, mm-hmm. or you know, checking out audiobooks, different things. And you know, it's great to have these partnerships, like our poetry contest is, we partner with Writer House for that. So yeah,
and it's kind of, I noticed for myself as an artist, it's kind of getting hard for people to come out of their shell. Mm-hmm. I know that it's really easy for me to create art and write and do poetry. It's really hard for me to share it, and it's really hard for me to collaborate with other people and do it. Mm-hmm. So breaking down those barriers as well, I think, is healthy, and I think that if y'all provide a venue for that, I think it's
well, that's
it's
like
beneficial.
A poetry on the steps. You could come and share your poem, and you
that's
would
right.
be with lots of people that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, but I'm shy.
We have
I'm
cookies.
Shy.
That's right. There are refreshments.
There are refreshments.
Of course, the best thing about
ooh, refreshments.
That is, that's right.
I'll bear my soul for Sprite.
There you go.
Why didn't you say
and
so?
Cookies.
That's right. For see, a good oatmeal cookie, I will bear my soul.
That's right. That's the best part
yeah,
about
it. That's got to be local yeah. and homemade and chewy.
That's the best part about poetry on the steps, because if you're a poet yourself, but you're not maybe not sure you're ready to read in front of an mm-hmm. audience, you can come
and get
enjoy
inspired.
What everybody
right.
else is
right.
saying, and you may be inspired to try to do that. So
you
that's
know,
another.
The goal is to create the safe space to be able to share those things.
Exactly right. So you know, people, there's no registration required
nope.
for that. People can just show up, and they can decide right at that moment if they want to read something.
And they don't have to.
Exactly.
You can just
they can
enjoy.
Just sit and enjoy the other poets.
That's great. So here's my suggested slogan for you guys: the public library, the ultimate safe. The public library, the ultimate safe space that politicians don't want to support enough.
And with that, we got to get out of here. But Tim Carrier, Brittany Eversberg, thank you so much. National Poem in Your Pocket Day, April 26th. It's going down. Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Shout out to them. Yo, I gave you those books back, so I'm not paying that fine. Deal with it. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Come on back. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So we got to wrap the show up. Stay tuned, y'all. Sunday morning wake-up call is next with Rick Moore, local students talking about recent anti-gun violence rallies here and abroad. keeping going on and forever, because this stuff needs to change. Does it? Yep.
Does it?
Yep.
I thought it was going to change when we gave guns to teachers.
No. We need to give, like, you know,
guns to librarians? Is that what's, it's that, or, is that what's next?
Or pens, you know, writing utensils to teachers and stuff like that. Yeah. What are we doing? Just stretching time? Stretching time? Usually we need to be out here for 10:58. All right, so we're stretching time. I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. Leslie's supposed to be here with the rant, and she's supposed to bail me out. I got nothing to rant about. Don't trust people. No more heroes. That's basically my rant for the week and for the month. But I'm going to be out here in these streets putting my ear to the ground for these people. Because love in Charlottesville is all I know how to do. I love you, Clinton. Leslie, wherever you're at, I love you, too.
Love you, David.
All right. One love, everybody. This is Homegrown. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
You've been listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. We'd like to thank our guests, Sarah Russell and Sarah Van Landingham, and also Tim Carey and Brittany Eversberg. Sarah and Sarah, of course, from the Fralin Art Museum at UVA, and Tim and Brittany from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library, the largest repository of art in the area. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services, like a song. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc., so is our closing music here. Our event music in the middle is from Positive Collective. Coming up next, it's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rowdy Rick Moore. He's not rowdy. He's a very nice guy. Coming up next, Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. It's a previously recorded version of the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. So if you must call in, you're going to be slightly disappointed. Because you won't be able to reach them, but you won't be disappointed listening to the show. His guests, of course, local students, talking about recent anti-gun violence rallies here and abroad. Once again, this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. We'll catch you next week. You a miracle made flesh. That's life of what you do a myriad paces. Haters that are jeering your faces. Unforeseen changes. They may be weird, but embrace them. Each fear that you face will bring you nearer to greatness. For mine. You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.